Welcome to East Meets West, episode 148. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
And we have an all-star cast joining us today.
It's like a constellation.
From left to right, Paul Saborn, Greg Hello. Storm, and Jonathan Colton.
Hello.
Howdy.
Hello.
I should have let you each say hello individually. My apologies.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, you just figure it out yourselves, everyone.
It's a collective hello.
Yeah. So that was Storm.
Yes.
Paul.
Hello.
And Jonathan.
Hello.
He's going to talk in that voice just to differentiate amongst the three of us.
I have an effect that will make you talk in that voice for the rest of the
show. I would appreciate you applying it. That would be nice.
It's the cookie puss filter.
So one of the main reasons that we wanted you guys on is I was driving down the road one day with Roger, and
ironically enough, actually not on the road.
No, I believe we were on the road. I'm not sure what trip you're thinking of.
You've shortchanged the story already. You were either on the road.
Poetic license.
You were driving.
No, I was driving, and we were talking about Jonathan Colton. And
Roger
said, "Who the hell is that?"
Oh, right.
No. See, the only reason I said that was because of the particular song you chose to play.
Well, I haven't got to that particular song because I was like, I just bought, I think you had like 70 songs up. I was like, I just bought the package from Jonathan's website. Let me pull it up on my iPod and I just put it on shuffle. And of course, the first song that came up was Rock and Roll Boy. Is that the name of that?
Yeah. It's not a great place to start necessarily.
and I made a mention that the child's voice in the background kind of made the whole song kind of creepy. And then
explain the song. It's sampled from an old cassette tape or something.
Yeah, I found on archive.org a CC licensed recording of a kid from must have been back in the 80s when this kid was 6 years old, and he was singing a song for his mom into the tape recorder, and you can hear like the big fat record button being pressed between phrases, and he sings a song called Rock and Roll Boy about he's a rock and roll boy and he loves his rock and roll toys, and I sort of added music to it and cleaned it up and chopped it up a little bit.
And then Roger, how did you respond to that?
It's like, holy crap, this is almost kind of like, you know, it's a pedophile.
Because it was just what I was going for. Yeah,
and Jonathan, just so you know, I was shocked, and I was like, "No, wait, let me pull up something else." And I almost ran the car off the road. Like,
See, now the car comes off the road.
You were just jumping ahead. So anyway, I just wanted to work this out so that Roger didn't think you were a pedophile anymore.
Yeah, just for the record, I am not a pedophile.
Not convicted.
Not in this state.
And you've heard many more songs since then,
yes.
Right, Roger?
Of course, the most popular one in my head is the one that ends Portal.
Still alive, yes. So.
Well, good. And so, Paul, Storm, I'm sorry that you guys had to witness that uncomfortable and awkward moment. But
Bear witness?
No, those are the moments that make life enjoyable.
Yeah. Being accused
when you're not participating in it.
Yeah. Absolutely. But yeah, you guys are all out on tour now together, and you guys regularly go on tour with Jonathan, right?
Yeah. We have some compromising photos of Jonathan, so until he figures out a way to get him out of our hands.
You'll always
he's forced
be part
to bring
of the
us
act.
Along with
yeah,
him.
Yeah, I don't have much of a choice at this point. Yeah, we do. And you know, touring—it's always funny when people say you guys are on tour because it's like a perpetual tour because we rarely are out for more than 3 or 4 days at a time, and we have often weeks in between these 3 or 4 day stretches of touring. So, compared with the way actual musicians tour, it's hard to think of this as a tour. But you know, I guess we're sort of we're constantly.
We like to think of it as Tour 2.0.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a permanent part-time tour.
Right.
Have you thought of putting out concert T-shirts and then just selling chalk with them so people could put their own dates on the back?
That's not a bad idea.
That's a great
actually.
Idea.
No, even better, have an embroiderer and then they can embroider it. Hey, I want it to be the 12th of next month.
Yeah, put that on the rider. We need some cold cuts, about 12 bottles of room temperature water, and an embroiderer.
Yeah.
A guild embroiderer.
Yeah. Now, what city are you guys based out of?
All of them.
I'm in Brooklyn.
Brooklyn?
Arlington, Virginia. I'm outside of Washington, D.C.
And I, Paul, am outside of Philadelphia.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that you guys weren't even in the same area then.
Nope.
I mean, you're not that far, I guess, but
yeah. It's about a 3-hour drive, so yeah. not near.
Yeah.
They're just a virtual duo.
Yeah.
Until
we're a duo 2.0.
Does that cause a problem when you do go play out? And you're like, oh.
No, we just, right. The first show of any tour is just the open rehearsal.
Getting to
we
know
make
each other again.
Make people pay to see us, you know, relearn our songs.
So is the first time you guys meet on tour on stage? Or
yes.
Do you guys meet at the airport? It's like, yes. Hey, what's up?
It is. We make sure of it. Sort of like the wedding night. And Paul will bring flowers. I'll have candy.
To keep it fresh.
Yeah.
Jonathan actually, he refuses to speak to us when we're not in public or on stage. You know, you should have seen the van over here from where we were eating. He just sort of
puts his head down
and
comfortable silence.
Yeah, I don't have to, so you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a hell of a facade you keep up though in public.
Yeah,
you would think we like.
I pretend
each other.
To be your friends.
Yeah.
How did you guys meet each other?
Believe it or not, we met on the internet.
Wow, isn't that kind of dangerous?
It is very dangerous. We were chatting for a while, and it was funny. We were all pretending to be 13-year-old girls.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
And then, so when we met, it was a disappointment, but also a nice surprise.
You like Hannah Montana? I like Hannah Montana.
I don't know why we were doing that, but then.
Hey, did you check out this recording of this kid that says "Rock and Roll Boy"?
It's really sexy. Did you email me after Baby
Got
Back?
I think I did. No, it was, we saw Hodgman.
Hodgman.
His first appearance, the book promoting appearance on The Daily Show.
Yes.
Went to the website and followed through to the 700 Hobos list.
Uh-huh.
And he had a link to Jonathan's site from, you know, I was impressed by anybody who could play Big Rock Candy Mountain for 48 minutes straight.
It's not easy.
And found the site, and he had just gotten into Thing a Week, and it was right around the time a Baby Got Back, I think, and I forwarded it to Storm. I was like, yes, cool. And we'd been in a band before that had was no longer performing. We were restarting as a duo, and we were just starting to go out and perform. We were looking for, you know, people to perform with, especially in New York, where we were trying to get, and it just worked out nice because, hey, Jonathan's in New York, it looks like he's just starting to perform. So we emailed and said, hi, will you be our friend? And luckily we caught him before he got too big and internet famous and to know any better. And we did a show or two together.
In between the Viagra and Cialis spam, he had an actual email from you.
Yeah.
That's right.
Now, Jonathan, when you suddenly became...
It's,
you know,
okay.
When you suddenly started getting kind of a celebrity status, did you find it kind of weird, or was it just kind of like one of those things that is like, oh, that's cool?
No, it's weird. It's totally weird. I still find it weird. You know, I don't know what it's like for people. You know, fame is a funny thing. I don't know if it's the same way for everybody, but for me, I never really feel like I should be a famous person, you know? But then sometimes people will treat me as if I'm a famous person. It's a very odd thing. I mean, it depends on the context. In most, you know, most of the time I can go outside and nobody knows who I am.
Which reminds me, do you need another water?
No,
Tom, it's okay. I already paid for it.
Oh, yeah, I owe you a quarter. Thank you for that. You know, there are certain places that I can go where nobody knows who I am, and there are other places where I will go and I'll get recognized, you know, and it's always, I don't know, it's very strange because I just feel like a regular dude still. I just feel like me. And then, you know, people get nervous when they meet me, which, you know.
What the hell's up with that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I understand. But then, you know, I always feel bad, like I'm tricking everybody into thinking that I'm a famous person, you know.
Well, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was going to say, and I still am sort of fascinated by your fame. It's in that it's a unique fame in that so much of it, it came on so quickly, but so much of it was, for lack of a better term, virtual.
Right.
Like, you know, the usual path to musical fame is you go out and you tour for months at a time and you go into a place and 6 people show up. You go back 3 months later, 8 people show up, and you just keep building up a fan base. Whereas, you know, with the whole viral nature of how you got popular, all of a sudden you had this fan base out there.
Clunk.
And started showing up in, you know, you show up in Denver, Colorado, and there's 275 people there the very first time. And it's really... I find that interesting. It's like, you know, you had no ramp up process.
Yeah, that's true. It's just it's like they fell from the sky.
It's sort of like the, you know, Tezande, you know, Chocolate Rain kind of thing.
Uh huh.
But monetized.
Yeah.
Did any of you kind of feel intimidated, like just suddenly seeing all these people you didn't see before show up at a show and kind of like, oh, I hope I don't, you know, do something or say something that makes me suddenly unpopular or anything like that?
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, it certainly was a shock when I started playing for bigger audiences. And you know, I used to get nervous. I've done enough shows now that I generally do not get nervous unless I perceive that the show that I'm doing is some sort of high-stakes show for some reason.
Or unless there's a pretty girl there.
If there's any pretty girl, I'm a wreck. But, you know, like when I played at PAX back in August, there were 8,000 people in the crowd. And that was kind of scary just because it was like, wow, that's a lot of people. And, you know, it's one thing to make a mistake in front of 200 people. It's another thing to make a mistake in front of 8,000 people, you know? And of course, either way, it's fine. But yeah, there's something daunting about, there's a threshold, a moving threshold of how big a crowd will make me nervous. Yeah.
And there's probably some people who don't realize sort of the story, but if I can, and it's been well documented, but if I can try to summarize, I'm going to skip a lot of parts, but the thing that really started getting attention, I think, was the Thing a Week podcast, where you did one song a week for 52 weeks and then put it out as a podcast. And that's where Babies Got Back comes from, right?
Mm-hmm.
Code Monkey.
Yeah.
Is Re Your Brains out of that as well?
Yeah.
So a lot of the songs that have become extraordinarily popular came out of that. And then you went and took that audience that was following that and said, okay, demand me to show up and I will show up and play.
Right.
Using Eventful, is that right?
Eventful.com, yeah.
Yeah. So when you're talking about the backwards thing, it's backwards, but it's not. It's actually a typical internet model.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, well, we're going to put stuff out virally and try to get people to consume it. And then once they consume it, then we'll start to figure out where they like it. And then we'll put our resources there.
Right.
Same process, just not in the physical world.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And to me, it's the only thing that ever made any sense. I mean, that's why I stayed out of the music business for a long time, because it was like, you know what? I don't want to rent a van and drive up and down the East Coast and do shows in towns where nobody knows who I am and nobody comes out.
That's right, do that coffee house show where three people are there.
Why
and
they're
asking you to be quiet because they're trying to read.
Right. Why would I do that? That sounds terrible. Yeah. What a waste of time, you know? So luckily we have the internet now, so I don't have to.
I mean, did you have high expectations when you started, or were your expectations just changing each time you got like another, you know, 100 people as audience members?
I had, when I first started, I had very low expectations. When I first started, because, you know, I just quit my day job writing software to do this crazy internet music thing, and I didn't have too much of a plan. I knew that I was going to do this Thing a Week thing. I wasn't convinced I was going to make money from that directly. I think when I was first starting, I imagined that I would attract attention and then be asked to write music for something else, like a television show or commercials, or I didn't know. I hadn't worked out the money part of it.
Like Monkey Shines.
Yeah, like Monkey Shines, the show that I wrote. Yeah, wrote that music for. And then, much to my surprise, you know, I started getting. It was Baby Got Back was the first one that was the sort of a viral hit, and like started getting enormous amounts of traffic, and you know, that's when I started actually selling the music instead of just making it free all the time. And yeah, you know, from there it was just ratcheting up bit by bit and bigger and bigger crowds. And, you know, it wasn't until near the end of that year that I started to believe it was actually I could actually make a sustainable living just doing this.
Would you ever do Thing a Week again?
You know, I would like to. I miss it, like, in a way.
Or Thing of Fortnite.
Thing of Fortnite. I don't have the time to do it now, which is kind of sad to me. You know, I didn't have anybody paying attention to me or anybody emailing me back in those days, so I had nothing to do but sit around and write songs.
He refers to those as the Cavern Club days.
Yeah. And now, you know, I mean, just touring, again, did you hear me hesitate to use that word? But just touring takes up a great deal of time, not just the time on the road, but the time spent preparing for it, you know, ordering T-shirts and having them shipped and making sure you have all your travel plans set up and all that stuff. It's a it's a lot of work, you know. It's a job, and so I don't have those large swaths of free time that I seem to require to be creative on a regular basis. But that said, you know, I really am so grateful to have had that experience, because I feel like I wrote a lot of great stuff that I wouldn't have otherwise written if it hadn't been for that self-imposed constraint.
Well, now, East Meets West isn't always about Jonathan Colton.
Despite appearances.
Yeah, but you bring it up enough.
Well, yeah. That was sort of an in-joke for Roger, actually.
It is.
But we talk about politics, we talk about TV shows. You guys are out driving around now. Do you get to watch, like, Battlestar Galactica?
Not a lot of TV when we're on the road.
Yeah, no. Well, it's tough because, you know, actually, I watch, you know, thank God for TiVo or its other equivalents. But, you know, when we're on the road, you know, we usually have a sound check somewhere between 5 and 6, and we're there, and then we do the show. And by the time we get done with that, we got to go have some crappy late night food and get back to the hotel room. Invariably, it's midnight or 1 o'clock. And besides maybe Conan O'Brien, or what's on after that, we don't really get to watch much there.
So let me tell you
about that. But that said, we catch up when we get home.
The season premiere, then.
Yeah, did something happen?
Who won the election?
Do you guys watch? Oh, we'll get to that. Do you guys watch Battlestar Galactica?
I'm caught up to somewhere in the middle of the last season, but I haven't I haven't seen through to the end of the last season.
Yeah, I've yet to invest myself. Like I heard about it way too late, and know I want to go back to the beginning and haven't done my work yet.
I'm sort of in the same boat. I mean, I'm halfway through season one of The Wire right now, so that's how far
that's
back
amazing,
I am.
Actually.
That is a great show.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
I've been meaning to just start that one.
It's you should not hesitate. It's the kind of show where, like, I'm jealous of everybody who hasn't seen it yet, because that means they get to see it.
So maybe I shouldn't watch it, so I can hold on to that.
It's a nice feeling. It's a nice feeling.
I get to still watch The Wire when I'm old and can't do anything else. I'll still have that to hold on to. I've actually felt that way about 24.
Yeah.
I watched one season of 24, I think the second season.
Uh-huh.
And then I was like, you know, this is something I just want to watch all in a row. I want to watch it not in 24 hours necessarily, then something gimmicky like that. But just, you know, I just want to watch it all in a row someday when I get time. So I've been sort of putting it off until I retire.
We just did that with Mad Men.
Just watch it all.
Yeah, because you don't have that horrible waiting feeling. Just
you can just jump into the next one.
That was the worst thing about Lost, is we picked it up near the end of the first season.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we got them off iTunes or something, and we were just watching them like candy, one after the other. And it was great. And then we started to have to watch, and like in the second season, we had to start watching them with like 2 week breaks between.
Yeah. Right.
It was a pain.
Set the pace off. We just got the Xbox with Xbox Live, and if you have Netflix, you can do direct streaming.
Oh, that's brilliant.
So we have been wailing through the old seasons of Knight Rider. So catching up on that.
That's the way to watch it, too. Yeah. You know?
You know,
you don't have to wait.
Well, that's exactly. What's going to happen?
You get the full story arc.
Yeah.
Well, what's funny, you mentioned I did that with Airwolf. And then I realized that the fourth season, because I never saw the fourth season, it's this horrible, horrible adulteration. It's basically what they did was they bought the rights after Belisario, the guy who produced the show, left.
Uh-huh.
And all the original cast members kind of like, well, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm not making enough money. So a Canadian company started producing it. And this is, you know, at the beginning of when a lot of television shows in the U.S. or American TV shows were being shot out of Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
So they use stock footage. They have really inane plots and nothing makes sense. And it's just like they did this for an entire season. And I think that's what killed the franchise. But you go through it's kind of interesting because as you watch these shows, one right after another, not having to wait for a week, you can inevitably see kind of like, okay, this is where it jumps the shark.
Right.
You know, this is where the writer left.
You can watch the production fall apart.
Yeah. This is where he stopped caring about combing his hair. And, you know, it's just, it's so funny because it's like watching time lapse. Like when you see a building being constructed,
right,
you don't really notice it over the span of a year because it happens so slowly. But when you speed it up, you kind of see it just, you know, go from, you know, a couple of stories up to 20, then, you know, 50, then 100.
Yeah. And then when they were pulling stock footage from stuff like Happy Days,
you know,
they were really off track.
Yeah.
Fonzie'd go rolling by for some reason.
Right. Wait, Ralph Mouth does not drive a helicopter.
Now, you guys mentioned bad food. What is the worst thing you've ever actually had to eat because you guys were hungry, but there was like, you know.
I can tell you exactly.
I think we all know what it is.
It
was a burrito.
That's not that wasn't going to be my answer.
Something else,
that wasn't. No, what were you thinking?
I was thinking that burger place in Seattle.
Now
the outdoor
say,
place that you remember you filmed that trip that weekend.
Outdoor burger place. Oh, that's not bad food. The burgers are good. Oh,
okay.
The fries are terrible.
No, it was Chicago. The chicken gizzards.
No, chicken gizzards.
The chicken gizzards. Yeah.
Fried?
Yes.
Yeah. That was a mistake.
We didn't have to eat chicken gizzards.
Sure you do.
But
you got an opportunity to eat chicken gizzards. By God, you ought to try them.
Boy, they were pretty bad.
There may be a way that chicken gizzards are prepared that they're good.
No.
I doubt
this wasn't
it.
You got little stones in it. It's never going to be good.
Kind of, so that's normal.
It's a stony taste.
It's a stone mashing thing. It's organ. It shouldn't be eaten.
If you have something that needs to be ground down on your teeth, they're an excellent...
But I think we got the authentic chicken gizzards.
Hey, my dad used to eat chicken gizzards, actually. He would always try to get me to eat them, and I was like, they taste like sand.
You know,
but
I can
fried sand, so it's the fried part's good.
I confess, when it said on the menu chicken gizzards, I was thinking chicken giblets.
Ah,
right.
Which I think would be better. Like, I do like deep fried chicken livers, but not so much the gizzards.
Yeah, pretty much anything deep fried is good.
Is okay.
Well, yeah. Now I'm curious now. Which burrito was it?
Oh, the burrito with the flavored sour cream.
That was in Minnesota, Minneapolis.
Yeah. And they were like, "Do you want regular sour cream?"
You got
flavored
burritos in Minneapolis.
Yeah, we did.
It's one of those things.
That's like getting pizza anywhere other than New York.
You know,
or
it's
Chicago.
After a show, it's 1:30 in the morning, and there's nothing. Like, there's only one place open, and that's where all the college kids are getting drunk and eating bad burritos. And they said, "Do you want
because they're drunk.
Spicy sour cream?"
Spicy sour cream. Yeah, and we're like, "Yeah, I'll have the one with the flavor powder in it." But it was not good.
High C or something.
It was
like
just
something a dental hygienist might put in your mouth.
It was terrible.
Oh, no, is there any spicy in that way? Like the minty way, not the
spicy like minty. Yeah, yeah.
Is there a city you guys ever go to and say, "Hey, we're coming to this city. We should order this to eat."
We actually we'll
these
solicit
guys. These guys are actually terrific. They're
foodies?
Such wonderful wonderful traveling companions because they always plan everything around meals and food. It's fantastic.
Yeah, even in our old band, like, you know, it was one of those things where we would stay in the crappy hotels or even sleep in the car occasionally, but we would never ever ever skimp on, like, we'd always feed ourselves well on the road.
Napoleon said an army travels on its stomach, and it's true with bands. If you keep the band members happy with food, everything else is cool.
There's a great, great website called roadfood.com.
Yeah.
Click, 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 click.
click, click, click.
It's just people submit reviews of local diners and burger joints.
Dives.
And, you know, anything fried, it goes in there. It's
nice. There's a lovely picture of...
Yeah, there's always a nice picture of some sort of, you know, meat and three place or a burger or bacon or whatever. It's broken down by region or by state or by cuisine type. And it's just filled with tremendous recommendations of local food.
Very helpful in the Midwest where it's hard to, there's not like a huge variety of great food, but there is great food in that kind of burger, root beer kind of way.
Or hidden gems that you might not have been able to find otherwise. Yeah.
Because, you know, otherwise it's all Olive Garden.
Don't mention that restaurant.
Yeah, Casa Gallardo.
I
worked there for
we worked with a Storm and I worked with a comic once who had a bit he swore was true. He said he was working in the middle of Nebraska or Iowa somewhere. And he was trying to get directions to the comedy club, and they said, "Well, you're gonna go down this road, and you're gonna turn right at the Italian place." And he drove back and forth through this town about four times before he realized the Italian place was Pizza Hut.
Ah,
they actually have in some phone books, like in the middle of Iowa, the ethnic food section, and you will find Pizza Hut there.
Well, it is. It's
and then you go to the supermarket, and you just find Tabasco sauce.
The Romans began Pizza Hut, I believe.
That's true. Yeah,
Pizzos Hutus.
It was as it was originally called in the Latin.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Well, with V's.
It was all spelled Pizza with Hut, V's, yes. But you had to know how to spell it, how to pronounce it. Yeah. You just saw a string of V's, and you knew if the right number were there, that it was pronounced pizza.
It was like a Latin binary.
Yeah.
Latin binary is the name of my...
Which reminds me, actually, you will never be there, but if you are ever in Greenville, Illinois...
You never know.
We could be.
Galesburg is where we're going to be. Never mind.
Galesburg's on the other side of the state. Greenville's on Interstate 70 between St. Louis and Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Exit 45. Okay. And Mario's Pizza is actually just an Italian restaurant that mostly serves pizza, but they have great Italian food and delicious pizza.
Because we do go to Indy quite a bit, so if we're ever going to St. Louis after that, we'll look it up.
Yeah. It's my hometown. That's the only reason I know of this place. Gotcha. And that's one of those places, it's not advertised on the billboards outside. And
right,
if you
meet
anywhere else in the town.
Not so much.
That I can think of. Yeah, not so much.
One of our favorite restaurants we originally found in our old band off of a billboard. The USS Chowder Pot 4, just outside of Hartford, Connecticut.
Oh, that sounds brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, you laugh.
But it's good.
It looks like that cliche family seafood restaurant where, you know, it's landlocked, but they have the piers and the lights and the lobster traps and all the rest. But the food is actually spot on.
Is it in any kind of water or is it just?
No.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's just on land.
Only when it rains.
No
they
moat.
They dug a little 4-foot moat around the entire
place. That's what I was thinking. Yeah. That's what I was imagining.
I actually just, 2 nights ago, we were in Denver. And sometimes I do this because I'm a masochist, I guess. They recommended this place called Casa Bonita, which there's a South Park episode that based around it. And it's an actual place. Lots of people thought they just made it up, but it is an actual place. It's basically sort of an oversized Mexican-themed Chuck E. Cheese.
It's Pretty House.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's House of Making You Poop Constantly for the Next 24 Hours is what it was. But there's cliff divers and mariachis, and there's a whole stupid.
There's cliff divers.
Yeah, it's the inside. It's a two-story building, and there's a big open atrium area in the center that has a pool on the bottom floor, and then about 12-15 feet up is a platform that they'll dive off the cliffs, and they have stupid skit things about like a guy with a trained gorilla and the gorilla escapes and runs around the restaurant
and it's the not a guy in a suit
and they've
it's
got
an actual gorilla it's hilarious.
That was the best part.
The gorilla's actually the guy.
Amazingly, the gorilla behaved exactly like a really bored 19-year-old kid who couldn't get work anywhere else. But it's it's one of those
the guys from Free Credit Report.
Yeah. Exactly.
Who we're often mistaken for.
Yeah.
I know.
The food was atrocious. And
it was like bland and everything was boiled, even the burritos.
It just.
Did you get the spicy sour cream?
I made the mistake of getting the spicy sour cream.
Never do.
But
it.
They have the a really sad arcade with about 8 games in it, 4 of which work.
All of them sticky.
And they have a like a mine, like a that you can, one of those little displays you supposedly can walk through. And that was closed while I was there. The place, the whole place holds 1,100 people if every nook and cranny was filled. And there was maybe 60 people there while I was there. So
that is a template for Mexican restaurants in the Midwest. And that's sort of the far end of it. But Casa Gallardo in Illinois was the same sort of thing, although no cliff divers.
This had the special cliff divers.
And no gorilla entertainment.
No.
Wow. They went all out.
That's what Chi-Chi's was missing, I guess.
Yeah.
Here you get
and still is to this day. I mean, they still learn a lot.
It's interesting. Exist? Like, some theme restaurants do very well. I mean, there was Pinnacle Peak back when I remember in high school when I went down to Southern California. They have this huge plastic cow, and it's a steak place, on top of the building. And one of the shticks of the place is that you're not supposed to wear a tie into the restaurant. There's a big sign that says, stop, no ties allowed beyond this point. And if you do insist on wearing a tie, they come out with a pair of scissors, cut it off, pin your name, they pin on a post-it note onto the tie your name, the time it was cut, and they put up on the ceiling. And you look up, up at the ceiling, and there's hundreds of ties where people just literally came in with a bad tie.
They would bring a tie just to get a cut. Yeah.
But the food's amazing. I mean, there's literally only 8 items, and the menu is like a brown paper bag, and it's written on the printed out on the brown paper bag. But it's like steak, chicken, and beans. But it's like some of the best steak I've ever had. And then you can see it. You walk by, they got these guys, turning the huge spits of meat on it.
That's a great place to take advertising execs and not tell them about the tie thing.
It's always great when you can teach the squares a lesson.
Yeah.
That's right. Stick it to the man.
Yeah, come on. Relax.
You don't need a tie.
What's with the choker? Joker? They really cut your tie? I feel bad for those people who get their ties.
It was like a really nice $400
tie.
Yeah,
exactly.
This was an orthopedic tie. I need this tie to breathe properly.
It was a medical device.
Right, an insulin pump tie.
Sorry, we thought it was a bolo.
I was wondering what
you
did.
A nasal cannula?
Well, there is a sign.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
That'd be great if
not read?
There's like a bunch of ties hanging from the ceiling, and then there's this one bit of plastic tubing and an oxygen tank hanging.
Half an oxygen tank that they sliced.
We told you, Mert. Sorry.
No oxygen for you.
Now, normally about partway through the show, we'll read some feedback from previous episodes, which won't mean anything to
That's
any
fine.
Of you. But please respond anyway.
Oh, we will.
We will. Sure.
That, you don't need to know anything about the topics to talk on the show, as is
we
obvious
don't.
by every episode that we're on. We were talking a lot about climate because we had the guy on a couple episodes ago who is the head of a company who wants to seed the ocean with iron in order to absorb CO2. Vance wrote in and said, I heard a cautionary tale recently on a trip to Yosemite. For a long time after the park services took over, they would rush to put out every wildfire that started in the Central Valley. After all, there were sensitive and even endangered plant and animal species in there. But soon they found out without the periodic and random wildfires, the undergrowth would become so dense that it would disrupt existing plant and animal life much more than the wildfires ever did. So they started allowing the fires to occur naturally, but just kept them in check against the developed areas. Pretty soon, some enthusiastic environments believed that the now necessary wildfires were not happening often enough, and we should intentionally start and manage the fires on a schedule. But once again, our knowledge was incomplete, and we inevitably made things worse again. The lesson the guide told us is that our knowledge of the intricate balance is still limited, and any actions we take, even with the best intentions, will trigger the law of unintended consequences.
Well, they don't have fires in the ocean.
Yeah. Problem one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless it's from a volcano. Because then they come
that's
out
a good
steaming
point.
And multi.
But it's a self-containing fire, really.
Until a forms an island, then you get Hawaii.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think there's no problem here.
Yeah, hey, if the unintended consequence is that I get to go surfing on a beautiful beach, sign me up.
That's an intended consequence, I think.
Oh,
I
maybe.
Think we start seeding it.
Yeah. Let's go.
Let's make some Hawaii.
Let's go.
I think the danger that no one is addressing here is if we put too much iron into the oceans, then inevitably the fish are going to start building tanks. And then where are we going to be when the fish tanks roll up the beach?
Inevitably?
Inevitably. Inexorably.
How do you know it would be the fish and not like the cephalopods?
Well, because well, they had their be the because cephalopods. it would be the smelt.
Yeah, I get it.
It was a pun. It was a pun.
You should appreciate that, Tom.
That's why I'm the only one who got it.
No, I got Tom it. I just wasn't laughing.
Well, I mean, they've been seeding our breakfast cereal with nutrients for 50 years.
And fluoride
years.
In the water.
Right.
And fluoride. Yeah. It's interesting because a lot of people are saying now, you know, heavy doses of fluoride are, I mean, they're bad because, you know, fluoride's a toxin.
Right.
And essentially what it does is it shrinks into your teeth, but over time it actually makes it brittle as well. So there's a lot of been a debate whether or not fluoridation should continue. In most municipal water supplies.
I've heard that. There's a whole conspiracy theory attached to it. And it's not just that the Russians are trying to use
it's
mind control.
Plot, yeah.
Fluids.
No, it has to do with some linkage to the military-industrial complex and fluoride as a byproduct of some industrial process. And that's why... That's what they ended up putting in the water.
Because
they had so much of it.
No, it's the dental lobby. They figure... You know, if you have strong teeth when you're a kid, that's cool. It's easy to take care of your teeth. Then when you're old and have more wealth and your teeth go bad because they're brittle, they rake it in.
Oh, that's a perfect business model.
Damn dentists.
But now we're going to bankrupt Social Security with all these brittle teeth.
Well, hey, you know.
Well, you know it's going to bankrupt anyway, so.
Someone's got to pay.
No one's helping Social Security.
No, it won't be around.
I do you guys think
is there
ever
is there anybody
no,
is there
not,
anybody
not
under the age of 40
plan.
Who expects Social Security?
I think
at
I
this
may
point?
Have mentioned this on this
no
on this show before, but I remember I was working at National Public Radio and there was
Name
a
dropper.
Social Security story in this was like 1993 during Clinton's first 100 days. There you go. That was an actual name drop right there.
Oh, well,
not that I had lunch.
No,
with
don't
him
let
or
me
any,
stop you. Go ahead.
Or smoke cigars or anything with him. I never even saw him except across the room at the White House when I got to go to a press conference.
Whoa.
Wow.
But anyway.
wait, Bill Clinton?
No.
Bruce Clinton.
George Clinton.
The guy from Parliament.
It's great. He got up to the podium and went, flashlight.
We're going to solve this energy crisis.
Thumpasaurus, party peoples.
But the producer was doing a Social Security story and said and turned to me as the youth in the office because I was the intern and was like, do you think are you planning on having Social Security? I'm like, oh, no. Mm-hmm. Nobody my age expects to get anything out of Social Security. It's just another tax.
Yeah. I think they'll reach a point where it's clear it's not going to happen, but we've paid in all this time and we'll get like, you know, $5 off coupons to Pizza Hut or something and they'll call
an
it
an ethnic restaurant.
Right.
Yes.
Perhaps there'll be other.
That's what they'll do is they'll say, you know, we're not giving you any Social Security when you retire, but you will get coupons for dinner at an Italian restaurant. And we'll think that's cool. And then they'll nail us.
And then there'll be people protesting about the Italian lobbies getting too much money. And...
Yeah.
And that leads into mafia jokes, which I don't want to make.
No, I don't really want to make
that. Not after the last time.
Well, let's wrap it up. Thank you guys so much. Paul and Storm, where can people find out more about you?
PaulandStorm.com.
And on the Twitter, internet, right?
And on Twitter, Paul and Storm, and I don't know, in the newspaper.
The newspaper?
Depending on how things go.
Call information and ask for Paul and Storm.
Ask for Paul and Storm.
Hello, can I speak to Paul and Storm, please? They're from
city,
the internet.
What city, please? The internet.
we do have a weekly podcast.
Oh, right.
Which you can find at paulandstorm.com.
Excellent. And jonathancolton.com, of course.
Yes. Also on Twitter.
Twitter.com/
Jonathan Colton.
Jonathan Colton. I'm the only one with the strange, goofy.
Yeah, what's that coming from? I'm curious.
All right.
Are you Boy Ace Detective?
No, it's a long story that I will try to compress into the shortest version I've ever told of it. I was trying to sign up for an ISP that gave me free web space with my dial-up in 1996. And I had T-merit at worldnet.att.net. So I found this other company, concentric.net, that gave you 5 megabytes free space. So I thought I'd come up with some other name, and I was reading a Raymond Chandler novel, so I wrote out Ace Detect correctly with the E and everything, and signed up, and then realized I had signed up for the plan that didn't give you the free web space. So I canceled it, but then once you canceled it, the username was not released.
Right.
So when I went back to sign up for the one with the free, Ace Detect was taken by me, who had canceled it. So I just said, oh, I'll be clever and drop the E. It'll be Ace Detect. And then that became my username. It became my website address for a while. And then when I would sign up for stuff, Tom Merritt, there's a lot of Tom Merritts out there.
Yeah.
Often Tom Merritt was taken. So I just signed up as Ace Detect, thinking like, oh, well, nobody will have that name, which no one has yet. And then it stuck.
That's funny. Do you find that it has taken on meaningful qualities for you? Does it sort of, you feel like you have some identity associated with that?
Yeah, at this point, it's been 12 years. So, yeah.
It's sort of an alter identity.
I created, when I was doing Subbrilliant News, the parody news website, I created a character called Ace D apostrophe Tect, who was sort of this immortal Frenchman who, media entrepreneur, who had, you know, lived for 500 years. And
writing.
It's like
writing.
A T. Herman's kind of thing.
But I'm not him.
No. That's someone
in case
else.
There was any.
Does like everyone buy you like magnifying glasses for Christmas?
No,
and stuff
because most people they look at it and they're like acid tect, arcad tect. Like no one really. It takes a little explaining.
Are you
sometimes.
Persian?
Yeah. Or they just don't bother emailing me because it's too hard to try to figure it out. So anyway,
way to market there, Tom.
Yeah, it's brilliant marketing. Make sure to keep those Twitter followers low. And you'll get more burgers. You heard about that, right? The Burger King thing?
No.
They on Facebook, they were giving out free Whoppers to anyone unfollowed 10 friends.
The decimation plan.
Yeah, exactly. And then Facebook kind of got mad and made them stop.
That's can't imagine. So how did they tell whether or not they would keep track of your account and see you?
Yeah, I guess the app was able to detect.
You got a free Whopper.
Woo-hoo. Yeah.
Right,
all it cost me was 10 friends.
And I guess the part that really got Facebook is apparently they would notify the people getting unfollowed. It's like, so-and-so just unfollowed you to get a free Whopper.
Right.
You're worth less than a burger today.
That is brilliant. You're less than one-tenth of a burger.
Yeah. From the people who brought you subservient chicken.
Mm. Oh, yeah, subservient chicken.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you guys very much.
Thank you. It was awesome.
Thank you. The tour dates are all at jonathancolton.com. Is that correct?
And at paulandstorm.com.
Tour dates?
And
at paulandstorm.com.
The ongoing tour.
Yeah. All right. Fantastic. You can find all of our information at our blog and comment on the episode at subbrilliant.com/EMW. See you later, folks.
Awesome.